Hello, and welcome to PodCatalyst, a podcast dedicated to emerging trends and thought leadership within the communications profession. I'm Peter Finn, Executive Director of the International Association of Business Communicators, or IABC. And every few weeks, I interview a thought leader where they can share their perspective on the profession and provide insight on a diverse set of issues facing professionals today. For this PodCatalyst interview, I interviewed Maya Bordeaux. Maya is a nationally recognized human resources executive, DEI strategist, and licensed attorney in Illinois. She recently ventured into consulting again and founded Lead with Love, LLC. Maya has held complex and transformational leadership roles in dynamic, mid-sized and large domestic and global companies. Prior to her current consulting roles, Maya served as Chief Human Resources and Communications Officer at Tribune Publishing. In that role, she had leadership oversight for all people strategies and programs, as well as all internal and external communications. She led a national team that provided HR and communication services to over 4,500 employees across the company's 8 U.S. markets. And prior to Tribune, Maya also held the position of Senior Vice President of People and Culture for Wilton Brands. She previously held HR leadership positions with other prestigious brands, including McDonald's, North Shore University Healthcare, or Health System, and University of Chicago Medical Center. It was a real pleasure to speak with Maya. I learned a lot during our discussion, and I think you'll really enjoy the interview. All right. I am with Maya Bordeaux today. We're going to talk about Maya's experience as a HR professional and attorney, and also now she has her own consultancy. But Maya, it's great to be able to speak with you. And I don't know if you could just tell us a little about yourself and your career journey.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Well, I am a Chicago native, and I have built a 25-year career in HR with probably the last 15 years in various leadership roles where both HR, diversity, and communications was a part of my scope of responsibilities. I am also a licensed attorney here in Illinois. And I'm often asked the question, how did I even begin on this journey? So obviously, you know, when I was 5, I did not say I want to be an HR executive. I actually wanted to be Oprah, and I wanted a talk show. And when I didn't get a talk show, then I decided, well, maybe law school will just have to do. So my plan was to actually be a lawyer, litigate in the space of employment and labor law, because I had already begun my HR journey. I was in more of an administrative role, but that was my first job when I was 18 and my first real job. And I have stayed the course in HR ever since. After my first year of law school, I decided I did not want to be an attorney. But I had already expended so much time, money, and energy that I went on and completed the law degree. And then I'm a real glutton for punishment. So I also joined the MBA program that I was doing at Loyola, but always with HR being my focus and working full time in HR during the day while I did this program, these academic programs at night. So I get my greatest joy from helping people. And I often say my superpower is to inspire people to be the best version of themselves. And so how I accomplish that is in my HR work, in my diversity work. And then most recently, I took a major step, a major leap of faith, and started my consulting firm.
Yeah, so because I was reading a little bit about your background, and especially in your diversity and inclusion work at North Shore Health Systems. And it's, you know, now it's, I think, on the forefront of a lot of companies or corporations or companies, you know, their agenda. But I think, you know, you had started this work, I think it was back in 2008, 2007. But I'm just curious to hear, you know, about some of the lessons that you've learned along the way and really kind of shifting people's perspectives. And, you know, I know in some cases, you know, there was the, people at the senior level or C-suite, you know, it's like, well, how does this impact the bottom line, you know, or, you know, things like that. So what's the business case for diversity? It seems like maybe that's less so now that, you know, everyone intuitively understands why this needs, you know, certain practices need to happen. I'd just like to hear more about, you know, your perspective. And, you know, it sounds like, I mean, you've been working on this for years. And also, I know you did this with the Tribune Company as well.
Yes, I did. So I, well, let me step back and explain that after all that was going on across our country in 2020, I had reached a point where I felt very, very hopeless and helpless. And so I was thinking through and trying to strategize, what can I do to help? How can I contribute to making this world a better place? And so I decided to start my consulting firm, Lead with Love Consulting, to support companies of all sizes across all industries in DEI strategy and DEI education, and also some HR consulting is a service that we provide. The demand for diversity, equity, inclusion consulting is at an all-time high. It has never, ever, ever been like this in my entire career. And in fact, it is in greater demand than even the supply of practitioners. So as you said, Peter, I've been doing this for many, many years. And so what value that I was able to bring to companies is the experience as a practitioner, as an HR executive leading these DEI efforts, as well as a consultant who's on the outside, able to assess what's going on, what the company needs, and then make a recommendations as to what they should put in place. So you're exactly right that most people get it now. There was like this global awakening that happened last year where most people and most leaders understand why diversity, equity, and inclusion matters. And you don't have to spend a whole lot of time and energy presenting a business case. However, what still is very much the case is this desire to see results and for the results to be immediate. And so what I've often had to coach leaders on is this work is evolutionary. It is a journey. And it's never really done. And so the way that I've had to work with executives to shift their thinking about, you know, this is something that is important to us now, and let's hurry up and get it done. And so I have worked on even their terminology and their phrasing of these efforts because it's not getting something done. It is truly shifting mindsets, shifting behaviors, and integrating these principles into all facets of the business. And so, what I have been working with companies to do is assess how much time and energy and resources they want to pour into this, and most importantly, the readiness for your company, because every company isn't ready for this. This is hard work. It can be very emotional. It can be polarizing if it is not done properly. And so that is an important part of the assessment phase when determining how much will we do, how fast will we move. Are you a culture that historically believes in incremental change, or you know, are you all a very fast-paced environment that implements a lot of changes quickly and without much resistance? And so I think that the greatest lesson that I have learned in this work is meeting people where they are and respecting diversity, respecting points of view, and that, you know, there are so many attributes and so many dimensions of diversity that come into the workplace that we are fortunate that we can, you know, lead teams where people get along. And so you have to be intentional as to how you create the most inclusive, the most fair, and the most diverse work environments.
And you know, when you're advising, in the past, the colleagues, coworkers, you're directing initiatives and your consulting work now, like, what are the, some of the metrics that you're looking at? Because I know, diversity, there's, certain things you can do around, there are things you can quantify, but the inclusion piece and, other things that you can't really like see that are right in front of you, like, how do you advise on that? And, as you said, people want to, are saying, well, I want this done today or done tomorrow. When will it be done? And it's, it is an evolution. So how do you, what are good feedback loops for that or things that you're on the right path or perhaps not on the right path, and the way that your employees are feeling or your coworkers are feeling, your team is feeling?
Yeah, so great question. So most of the monitoring and measuring of progress falls into the categories of communication and education. And when I say communication, what I mean is an effective diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy includes a strategic focus on communications and creating many or multiple channels of communication, multiple ways for there to be two-way communication, and that there is a commitment from the executive team that there is a level of transparency and empathy and that you are regularly communicating with employees on a planned schedule of communication. So the reason why I emphasize planned is because what happened and what we saw happen in 2020 was a lot of reactionary communications where, CEOs and various executives, every time something horrible happened in a country, then now this email was coming out.
Yeah.
And so, a best practice is that you are far more proactive in communicating about this topic and that it's not wrong or when, some travesty has occurred. And so communication is so critically important to being successful in this space. And then coupled with that is education, because you got to be educated on this topic in order to communicate effectively. And so where companies go wrong is they don't understand the sensitivity of this topic and just write up something and send it out to employees without understanding how you may be unintentionally offending or excluding people within the organization. And so it's really important that you have a communications expert who is also working with someone with some DEI expertise to ensure that the messages are inclusive, are respectful, are politically correct. And so that is where, many companies have gone wrong when they had good intentions and felt like they needed to say something, but didn't do their due diligence before sending out communications or hosting a meeting. And so education is so important. Training opportunities for all members of the company is critically important to ensuring that there is a common terminology being used across the company and that people understand these terms when it's being used in communications that are officially rolling out from the leadership team.
Yeah. And do you think that there's some reputational risk as well if you're sort of, externally, making the statement in reaction to something that's happened when maybe internally you're not really doing a lot on the DE&I front? And I, not to call out any particular companies, but it sometimes felt a bit performative that you had companies making these statements when in fact, internally, it wasn't as if it was a priority within the organization.
Oh, so you're exactly right. So some other forms of measurement around like how companies are doing with their DEI climate is obviously inclusion surveys, focus groups, town halls, pulse surveys, the tracking of demographics across the company, and then comparing that and analyzing that to the demographics of those who are advanced and promoted and who are retained within the company. And so there are many red flags that a leadership team can see if they don't have a healthy DEI climate. And so some of the things that I just named are different tools that companies use or that DEI practitioners advise that companies should use to be able to measure the climate, measure retention, who are you hiring, who are you promoting, and how do they feel once they are there?
Yeah. And I mentioned this because I used to work with a lot of engineering organizations through the association that I worked with, and we would work on DE&I initiatives with them. And, you know, what I oftentimes found is that the leadership that got it, it was the folks in the middle management that struggled. And I don't know if that's something that you see, but it's, that's, you know, I think when you're talking before about, you know, the culture piece, like if those behaviors are not, you know, shifted, or, you know, you're sort of modeling the right ones at that middle manager level, you know, everything kind of feels like it's going to fall apart a bit. And I don't know if that's something that you've seen or observed, but sometimes that's the piece that really needs to change, is those folks that are in the middle.
So yes, you're exactly right. I see it all the time. And that is absolutely where everything falls apart, because the middle management team are typically the people who manage the day-to-day. The leadership team, the executive team, senior leadership team, whatever is the term that a company uses, I use the analogy for them, that they are flying at 50,000 feet. So they experience the culture in a very different way than the rest of the organization. And you're right, Peter, you know, you typically start with the senior team from an education standpoint, and they quickly get it. And they see how it impacts the bottom line. And they see how expensive turnover is. And they see the risk associated with not having an equitable workplace. But if they don't then invest that same amount of energy in that middle management group, the messaging gets lost. And the behaviors that are supposed to be modeled on a daily basis are not being modeled. So then the staff view the leadership team as either totally tapped out or hypocritical, because they're saying one thing, but their manager, who they interact with every day, is doing something different.
Yeah.
So, you know, how you close that gap is, you absolutely, as a best practice, start with the executive team in that education and strategizing, but you have to focus on that middle manager group, or this will fall apart. It is not at all sustainable change.
Yeah. And, you know, from sort of the corporate perspective, I mean, do you see more companies kind of, having more of a focus and partnering with universities and, you know, community colleges, and you know, trying to also affect, you know, bring some change through, you know, before people even get into the workforce, being able to do some things, you know, before they're even recruiting people, you know, how to partner with universities, how to kind of build these partnerships, especially as they, you know, try to diversify their own workforce and become a more inclusive, you know, company. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're seeing?
Oh yeah. So much so that we've been trying to like pump the brakes, practitioners like myself, pumping the brakes and telling companies and leaders that is not the only thing that you can do to diversify your workforce. Because literally last year, all of a sudden, companies everywhere decided, oh, we got to start recruiting from HBCUs, mm-hmm. historically Black colleges and universities, and completely overwhelmed the HBCUs, because literally thousands and thousands of companies are saying, you know, now we want to work with an HBCU. Well, first of all, HBCU highly likely means you are only tapping into a Black or African American student population. So what about all the other areas of diversity that you want to bring into the organization. So while partnering with universities, community organizations is absolutely a best practice, what I have seen as a very strong and rapid trend is geographical diversity. Being able to cast a broader net because of how the workplace, the work environment has changed as a result of the pandemic and people working remotely, jobs that you historically may not have deemed a remote job have now either become a permanently remote job or 100% a remote job or a hybrid. And so now your reach is so much broader when you have a job that opens and you are posting it in Chicago, but somebody in New York can apply for it because it's 100% remote. And so that has been a wonderful opportunity for companies across the U.S. And abroad, outside of the U.S., that have been able to really shift the demographics of their hiring pool because of that that global reach when you can work remotely.
Yeah. And with your consultancy now, has obviously different approach than being in a company and now those, you know, you're on the consultant side. Has being a consultant kind of freed you up to kind of take a different lens on things? I mean, you know, the way that you're thinking about some of these issues, especially as it relates to, you know, DE&I?
So that's an interesting question. I don't think that my lens or my approach has changed. What I do think and what I'm grateful for is the diversity of my experiences. So when you're inside working for a company, you are leading the efforts for that one company. Versus as a consultant, I have literally had clients all over the world. You know, Australia, China, Japan, India. And I wouldn't have that, obviously, you know, working for a company here in my hometown.
Yeah.
So that has been fantastic to be able to tackle these issues and how much they differ outside of the U.S., particularly because of the U.S., our history, and it just being a very race-conscious country. It is fascinating to learn the other challenges, the people challenges that companies face outside of the U.S., and what diversity means in China or Japan or Singapore. So yeah, just that has been fantastic. And then of course, the flexibility of, you know, making your own schedule and being your own boss and all that jazz, you know, that is the upside of being a consultant. I will say, Peter, like I don't have an entrepreneur bone in my body. So this was the scariest thing I have ever done. But I felt that it was necessary. I felt that it was timely. And it has been a fantastic decision, both personally and professionally for me, because it's incredibly rewarding work when you know that you are helping people and helping them make a real impact for the people that work within their company. So I'm very happy that I did this.
Yeah, any, you know, because we certainly have, you know, members of the association just in the broader community that, you know, will kind of switch gears and start their own consultancy. Any advice for those folks, and, you know, as if they're pondering it or at the beginning, or, you know, what's kind of stood out as something that you could impart on other folks?
Yeah. So if you are not a good time manager, you know, being an entrepreneur might not be good for you because you have to be disciplined And, you know, otherwise you just spend the day drinking wine and eating bonbons because there's no boss, right? And so, so you got to be disciplined with your time management. The other thing is you have to be flexible with ambiguity. Without the structure of every 2 weeks, I will get a check. I am on payroll and I get this amount and I expect it on these 2 weeks. I mean, you can go months without receiving payment from a client. And so, you know, being prepared for that from a budget standpoint and from a mindset standpoint is really important. And then the other thing that became crystal clear for me, as I was talking to my accountant today, get a bookkeeper, have a business accountant, and you do not think that you can do it all by yourself. So I would say, you know, those are the key things that I would say are tips.
And, you know, I have one last question for you, and that's what gets you up in the morning?
Ooh, what gets me up? And I'm like, so I have teenage girls, two dogs. So that's really what gets all of that noise and chaos with their between their music and their hair dryers. But in addition to that, it's a point that I made earlier, Peter. This is incredibly rewarding work. And I get fired up every time I have a session with someone and they end that session saying, you know, this really helped me, or that was really great, or, you know, you have given me some practical solutions and tools that I can use moving forward. And then I've been able to meet just great and interesting people. And I've come to learn that we focus so much on why and how we're different. And it's so fascinating to see how often we're the same. And even if, you know, we were born on the other side of the world, like, it is so often when you connect with people and realize how much you have in common. So it's just really, really been enjoyable.
Well, I was actually just having that conversation with somebody. So totally agree. Well, thanks so much for speaking with me. And yeah, this has been a real pleasure, man.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Peter, for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a good day.
You too.
Again, thanks to Maya for speaking with me today. I learned so much in our discussion. It was such a privilege to speak with her. And we will have some other PodCatalyst episodes in the near future, one of which will be highlighting the upcoming World Conference. So thanks so much.